$14 beans, $6 corn, or $5 corn, the market is incentivizing us to run less cattle and try to crop as many acres as we can. So that's an area that will continue to be a challenge for the livestock industry here over the next several years. Urban sprawl. Tom, I've heard you use the number that year in and year out we lose about 9 million acres to urban sprawl across the U.S. Now, I don't know where you came up with that number, but it sounds good. So I'm going to repeat it. That's a big number when you think about it. 8 or 9 million acres lost to urban sprawl on an annual basis. And do you have anything you'd want to add to that?
Add, Randy, is that there are several economists who believe that in addition to that, in the next 10 years with the baby boomers literally ready to transfer their assets, that we will transfer assets in land equivalent to the size of the Louisiana Purchase to the next generation. And their choices are going to be very critical to what happens to this business.
Wow. That's significant. Policy, we've talked about government policy. Age of the producer, that's always been, I've been around quite a few years, and that's always been something we've talked about, but we don't have a lot of young people coming back in. And with the cost of entry today, when we look at land values, we look at what it costs to get in the business, credit availability, et cetera, that is obviously a challenge for us, and the profit and loss piece. This just gives you a pretty good feel of what's happened with these real estate values over time. This is the average real estate values if we put them all together. It's about a 75% increase in values. But if we look at grazing values in the same time period of lands across the United States, they've increased over 100%. I believe the number is 102% is how much grazing land values have changed in here in that same five-year time period. There's the drought situation that we've had. Obviously, we've still got a mess down here in the southeast. The west has improved significantly this winter, but this drought mass, we need to stay focused on where that moves this year. We need to stay focused. Again, 25% of the nation's cow herd have been in the southeast region of the country. There's where our ethanol plants are. Are all these ethanol plants in the locations of where the cattle are being fed? The lion's share of these ethanol plants are up in here in the Midwest. We still have 75% of the nation's fed cattle fed from Nebraska, Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. 75% are fed in that five-state area. And we've got the lion's share of these ethanol plants further north or further east. So something's got freight on it, doesn't it? We've got a lot of wet feed. As this thing continues to build out, we're not likely going to be able to utilize all of that in livestock rations. And I doubt if we'll be able to use it all in pork rations or poultry rations, whatever the case may be. There's a change in grain prices. Again, we've had somewhat of a cycle in grain prices over a long period of time. This goes clear back into the early part of the 1900s. We spent 35 years from 1908 to 1942 with corn prices averaging 72 bushel. And you can see the variability we had around it. Then we moved up to a new range, spent 30 years from 1943 to 1972, '43 to '72 at $1.27 a bushel. Then we raised it up again. You can see the transition we've been in. Over the last 18 months, we've shared with you, corn prices are going to move higher. Corn prices are going to move higher. This is a demand bull market in corn. It is not a supply bull market. Nearly every one of the markets that all of us have cut our teeth on over the course of the last 30 or 40 years have been supplies. We'll have a shortage of supply and a run-up in price, and it's short-lived. This is a demand bull. This will not be a short-lived situation with corn. Now, I'm not saying that corn is going to stay at $5 or $6, but corn is going to stay at elevated levels. We're very likely to stay up in here from 3 to 4. This year, we think we're going to get corn prices up in here $5.5 to $6 a bushel. We won't stay there, but we'll likely average on top of $4 for the year. But higher grain prices are going to be in place here for the next several years. Hay prices. I ran into a number of you last night. A little tougher winter than you anticipated. Have to go back in the market and buy hay. That's been quite a deal, hasn't it? Been quite a shock. Look at where these hay prices are. Well, if we have a choice, are we going to grow hay? Are we going to grow beans, wheat, whatever, when we look at the values there? We're not likely to fix this supply situation over on the hay side anytime soon either. So when you look at all of these cost elements, you put them all together. This isn't in your handout, but I thought it was very appropriate to share with you today, is just to take a real quick glimpse at how much some of these inputs have changed here over the course of the last several years. Hay's up 58%. Corn's up 94%. Pasture value's up 120%. Crude oil price is up 152%. Nitrogen's up 130%. And the value of a 750-pound steer is up 23%. Everybody get that? When you look at what's happened with inputs, you see what's changed with inputs, you put it all together with the current policy, I think it's very safe to say the cattle cycle that we've known from an inventory and number standpoint, until some of these things change, it's dead. It's dead. We can still see some production cycles as we move forward. We'll still see a lot of price volatility, but the cattle cycle itself is, as I said earlier, on life support. With that, I'm going to transition here, bring up Mike Murphy, and we'll move into some of the detail from an overall cost standpoint and some of the opportunities that we see relative to differentiating your overall production.
Thanks, Randy. Randy talked a lot about looking at some of the stuff from a cycle perspective and what we've seen more from a macro view. What we want to focus in on a little bit, is talking about price, cost, and returns, and how those three kind of work together in terms of driving your business. When we look at this first graph, this is looking at our U.S. annual average calf price for a 550-pound steer. And you can see the cycle that Randy had talked about in here when you look at it from a price standpoint. I think as we go forward with some of the uncertainty that we have, we're not necessarily for sure what kind of a pattern we'll see in the next 5 to 10 years. If you'll see that cyclical nature or if it's more flat, there's a lot of variables out there that have to work themselves out, whether it's grain prices, the potential for higher fed cattle prices because of inflationary pushes. So we're not real sure, but the thing that we want to note here is that from a price standpoint, we know that when we start looking at costs, we have to be able to maintain these prices for this industry to be profitable. And if we're not profitable, then what's going to happen? We're going to continue to contract this industry, more from an economic standpoint, let alone all the variables that Randy had talked about here in the last few minutes. So I think it's important to really understand where we need to be able to maintain these levels. And as we talk through a few more of these, you'll have a better handle of that. I think it's critical to understand where you are from a region standpoint and what that means from a price standpoint. We continue to see bigger and bigger discounts the farther away you are from the Central Plains, which is where the hub of the cattle feeding region is. When you think about the Western region and the Southeast region, this is looking at the data in terms of the Western region. You can see that we've got bigger discounts in here when you go from where we were in the 1980s up to where we were in the early part of this decade and in this last year. Part of that goes back to the energy situation, transportation. You know, that's what we always kind of use as the simple basis was what was transportation from the Western region or Southeast into the Central Plains. There's other variables that are going on there as well that drives these spreads to be a little bit wider. So as a cow-calf producer, what you have to do is recognize, one, that we have bigger discounts in these regions. And then, two, what are certain things that you can do to try to capture more value for your calves? There might be several things. You might need to be looking at niche markets, whether those are trying to provide for a natural market, maybe do some of the things that are related back to source and age verification, where we've seen some pretty lofty premiums for those kind of cattle. It might be something looks like we were trying to add more weight after you wean that calf. If you do that, obviously you need to be trying to manage your risk as you go through that process. But you've got to look at different ways to add value to that animal because you're essentially taking less in your part of the country, whether it's the west, the southeast, than you are in the Central Plains. So important to recognize that. Which kind of then ties in, we know what these prices are, you understand what we need to do in terms of adding that value, but really, what are some other areas that you need to focus in on in terms of trying to help your returns? Well, obviously, cost is that other part of the equation. This data looks at the CalFax data that we have run from a survey standpoint over the last couple of decades. And this may not fit anybody. It's more of an average. What we really want to be able to illustrate here is that look at what we've seen in here over the course of the last few years. Significant increase in cost in terms of running a cow. This is cash cost, as you can see by the title of the graph. But look, just in the last 4 years, we've had almost a $60 increase in cost of running a cow. That has a direct impact on your returns. Where is this going to go when we start thinking about the graph that Randy showed right before I came up? What is the likelihood of cow cost starting to go back the other direction and decline? Not very good at this point in time, is it? Not here in the next 2 or 3 years. Costs are going to continue to rise as we look forward here in the short term. You've got to recognize that. This is something that we've been certainly talking about a lot in here over the last 5 to 7 years, where on average as an industry in the cow-calf sector, we've been profitable. And when you're profitable, those are times where you want to be able to start to try to look at different parts of your business to try to trim costs. Because if you happen to make a mistake, it's not going to be the end of the world. As your margins are shrinking, it becomes more difficult to experiment, if you will, in looking at ways of trimming costs. But the bottom line is we're in a scenario here where we have to do that. Costs are increasing. We recognize that. We've got to find ways to trim those costs. And we'll show you a little bit of data here in a few minutes that will help you understand how we can maybe do that. We got price. We got cost. And when we think about cost, the question that always comes up is that, well, you know, I'm in a region that I just can't trim costs. You know, it's impossible for me to trim costs. And that's not necessarily true the way we evaluate and look at the data historically. Again, this data comes from our survey, and you can see that when you look at the data, when we look at the region, there's very little variance across these regions. So it doesn't necessarily matter where you live, whether it's in Nevada, or if it's in Florida, or if it's in Montana. You have an opportunity to kind of have a manageable level, if you will, or target in terms of that cost number for running cows. You know, we like to use kind of that dollar a day. And I think we all recognize that that's not as achievable today as it was 3 or 4 years ago. But still, you've got to have a target, and I think somewhere in here that, you know, close to $400 a year on a cash cost standpoint is very achievable. And again, it doesn't matter where you are, you just got to be able to look at your operation, start to evaluate it, analyze it, and look for ways to trim those costs. And there's lots of help out there in terms of helping you make those decisions, whether it's extension help, whether it's looking at some of the pharmaceutical information that might be available, you know, things of looking at like having a nutritionist and a vet on consulting basis to help you make some of those decisions. All those little things will help you in the long run. It may cost a little money up front, but in the long run, it will help you trim down your cost structure. But what the bottom line is, we can talk about prices and we can talk about costs, but what we really want to do is get a return. And this is what we've seen in here. This is looking at our data, again, the cow-calf survey data. And we've got this data going back since the early 1980s. And the high return producer, which is this yellow gold line, is the top third in our information or in our analysis with the survey data. The bottom third is this low return producer. And then you can see here where we are from an average standpoint over time. But when you sit there and you look at it, as Randy pointed out a little earlier, the last 10 years have been pretty good for everybody. Obviously, everybody's had a little bit of an influence because of drought. In some of those years, it might have been a little thinner than others because of that. But the bottom line is on average, we've had a pretty good run in terms of profitability. Regardless of what your cost structure is, even the guys that we consider to be the low-return producers have made some money in here over the course of the last 10 years. Even with that being said, though, what's interesting, we're still losing some numbers in here, aren't we? We still have lost some beef cow numbers when you think about where we were back here in the late 90s. So that tells you that there's obviously some people that have even been worse off than what we're showing here in terms of the data. But when you look at this chart and you go home here after this meeting over the course of the next few days here in Reno, we always encourage people to go and just pull out your historical information from a return standpoint and just line yourself up and see where you measure against what the average is and what the high return and low return guys are. That's the first step, and then you can start to evaluate what is the best route to try to make more money within your operation, to improve your returns within your operation. But as you can see here, we think that the returns are going to decline in here over the course of the next couple of years. Obviously, we've had some decline the last few years. And why is it? It goes back to what we showed in that slide, declining calf prices, increasing costs. And so we're coming into a time frame where the returns are going to go ahead and decline in here the next few years. But there's always been certain things that when you look at and you measure the guys that are in the high return sector, there's certain things that they do in their business that stand out compared to everybody else that allows them to be a high-return operation. And it all kind of ties back in here. A lot of it ties back in here to see these below-average cow costs. Lower feed costs. On average, the high-return guys always have lower feed costs. And you ask yourself, well, how does that work? Well, a lot of it goes back to some of the other things that we have here. They probably have a little bit more efficient cow. Maybe a cow that's in their region can eat less and still be an efficient kind of a cow. At times, they might have been the producers out there that when hay prices were low, that they were stockpiling a lot of hay for the next few years, just taking advantage of the market when they have that opportunity. Might be operations where instead of raising all of their own feed, they're actually buying feed out there in the open market. Think about what we see in terms of just the equipment cost of trying to produce hay. Does it make more sense to go out there and buy your feed on an annual basis versus raising it? You know, in some of those regions, and that's not going to apply as much here in the western region, but when we get in the southeast, where we run a lot of these operations on 200 and 300 acre deals, these smaller operations, why don't we share some equipment? Why do we all need to have our own tractor and our own mower and our own baler? We can share some equipment. These are different things. Looking at the alternative feed products that might be out there, especially here in the last few years, if you happen to be in the Central Plains in the Midwest, some of the byproduct from ethanol might have been opportunities for these guys to have a lower feed cost base. Interest. You know, in general, they have lower interest expense because they have less debt against their operation or against their cows. When they've made a little bit of money, they've been able to pay down their note a little more so they don't have to carry as much interest cost. That's been a very strong one for the guys in terms of these high-return producers. Lower general operating expense. And then you get into some more of the production stuff. Higher average weaning weights. Higher conception rates. More pounds weaned per cow exposed. That goes back to having data. The key thing for any cow-calf operation is data. That's the key thing for any business. But if you've got the data, and then you can use that data to measure yourself, benchmark what you've done historically, you're going to be able to evaluate where the opportunities are. Granted, all cow-calf operations are not going to be able to step out there and say, yeah, well, we can do this, and we can do this, and we can do this within the next year or two. As you guys know, it doesn't work that quickly in the cow-calf business. But there's still opportunity, I think, for all operations to take advantage of this. There's times when you have, like we've seen here in the last couple of years, especially in the southeast and a year ago in the south central plains, where you had to feed a little bit more through the summertime, so your feed cost was going to go up a little bit more, but you were able to get a higher conception rate, and you had to do that because you had to have the conditions for your cows. It's moving with what's being dealt with you throughout the year and recognizing and making the changes that you need to and acting quickly when you make those changes. Here's one that I think is always interesting. High-quality bulls with strong genetics. When we go back and look at our data in the last 20 years in our survey, the high-return producers spend the most money on bulls every single year. They go out there, they select the right kind of genetics, they're studying the genetics, they're watching the EPDs. Obviously, they need to be able to have bulls, especially in the big country out here in the West, that can adapt to their region and travel. There's no doubt about that. But they spend the most money, those high-return producers spend more money on genetics. That's very critical. We got to continue to evaluate our business and recognize what we need there in terms of that better genetic. Another point. The high-return producers always spend the most money on their herd health programs. That's where they have a vet on consultant or a nutrition on consultant. Asking the questions, looking at their business,